the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals NFL Wire site. This is episode 403 with Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Again, this is episode 403. We're back recording on a Tuesday night. Hopefully you all caught the last episode that I had when I brought on Lasitas Smith from the Cardinals, looking for he talked about his rookie season, what's coming up this offseason, how he wants to prove that he wants to win a starting role for this next year, whether that's either guard position or whether he believes he can play center or either guard position. He still has a little bit of work to do that. But if you haven't subscribed to the show and catch up on those old shows, and in the last couple of weeks, I had Lasitas Smith on, had Devon Kennard, DK, talking, former Cardinal, about some of the things, his time with the Cardinals, his new book coming out. But this is episode 403. We're going to talk about some of the things as the Cardinals and the rest of the NFL is in Indianapolis. We're not quite ready to talk about the Combine, but there's stuff leading up to it. So we will have our Combine shows next week. We'll probably have another show coming up this week where we talk about kind of the positions and how critical there is at each position or what positions are the greatest needs. But Seth, we now have a coaching staff in place, even though it hasn't been announced. And we've heard the coaches, we've heard the head coach and the coordinators, we've heard Monty Austenfort. And so far, we can say with a certainty that we don't know anything about what they're going to do, right?
Yeah, and you wonder how much of it is them still figuring things out for themselves, right? Like, you know, I talked about it a little bit off the air. You go in, you know players from film, but you got to learn about the players as well. And so, you know, you don't want to square peg round hole this thing too hard, especially coming off what was, you know, feels like a lot of square peg round hole situations in the Vance Joseph era. And hell, even in the Cliff Kingsbury offensive era, like, you just look at it, and adaptability, something that Gannon and both coordinators talked about quite a bit, is I think what the biggest thing is that you and I want to see, right? Are guys that go, okay, this is what I want to do. It's not there yet, so this is how I'm going to adapt what I want to do to be able to do something different. And that's, you know, that's one of the big things that we've heard. Now the question obviously becomes, what type of practice are they able to put that in? And but we also have to understand that this is a as we'll discuss later this week, this is a slightly larger retooling than they're trying to let on at this moment. Doesn't mean it can't happen quickly and they can't compete, you know, in year one, but it just, there's a lot of pieces that have to come together.
Yes, absolutely. And as because we've talked so much about the coaching search over the last several weeks, it feels like our shows are going to be content rich for the next couple of 3 weeks as the Combine is here. Free agency is right around the corner, and then the draft will be here. So there will be no shortage of content. I think we'll be able to pump out a couple of shows a week, whether it's Seth and I, whether it's just me, whether it's me getting some other guys to come on the show and talk about things. But in this show, we want to talk about some of the latest that's been going on. Adrian Wilson, I think that we're going to lead with that. Adrian Wilson leaving the Cardinals for a promotion with the Carolina Panthers. And we'll kind of talk about what was said about DeAndre Hopkins, what we think might happen with Isaiah Simmons in a new defense, and comment on Jonathan Gannon's comments about his classroom meetings. So let's start with that. It was reported on Monday afternoon by Ian Rappaport that the Carolina Panthers stole Adrian Wilson away from the Arizona Cardinals and gave him a promotion. He will now be the vice president of player personnel for the Panthers. It was mildly surprising, and the fun part was the fact that Adrian Wilson himself, I follow him on Twitter. Not everyone can. He's got a protected account, but it was funny because after Rappaport reported it, he was like, I have no idea how he got that. And he's like, but congrats on scooping it. And that led to some questions early. So before we get into what A-Dub said himself in his statement to thank the Cardinals and everything, what are your feelings on Adrian Wilson leaving the organization? For me, it feels a little bittersweet.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad because he had been kind of, I mean, I know at the end he was with the Patriots and Bears kind of fleetingly, but so it's sad to see a guy that was basically a lifelong Cardinal, a guy that's in the Ring of Honor, you know, have to move on. But it's something you and I have talked about. They kind of needed this, right? Like, while we loved Adrian the player and we respected what Adrian the front office guy had grown into over his 8 seasons in Arizona, he's also on the front office side, he's part of what was that old regime, right? Like that old way of thinking, the old way of doing things. And, you know, somebody brought it up, and I think it's a fair question, you know, how much did Adrian get to do on his own? And it's not something that we'll really ever know, right? Because we weren't in the meetings and we weren't, you know, part of that. But I think for the Cardinals to move into a new era, especially where they are the, you know, Monty Austin Fort led Arizona Cardinals, obviously with Coach Gannon, you know, riding shotgun, they needed kind of that break from what they've had. And it's unfortunate that, you know, that included we figured it was coming, but now that it's here, having to lose a guy that's a legacy, and that's the tough part. And I think that's, and I know people don't like when I say this, but I think that's honestly part of one of the biggest issues the Arizona Cardinals have had over their time, is that whether it's players or front office or things like that, that they tend to be a little too nostalgic for a team that never wins.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's completely fair.
And so that to me is, you know, you can have Adrian and say, like, without a doubt, he's one of the probably, 20 most important Arizona Cardinals?
Yeah.
Well, not just Arizona Cardinals, but Cardinals, you know.
Yeah, in Cardinals' absolute franchise history. And honestly, might be a top 10. A top 10
right.
franchise historic legacy player.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's okay to say that, have that, and then still be like, we need to move on or need to go in separate ways. Because at the end of the day, what it's about isn't about a guy like Larry Wilson or, you know, Adrian Wilson or whoever, you know, was the historic player involved also being a key member of the front office or GM in Wilson's, you know, Larry's case. It's about getting the right people in there. Whether or not they were lifelong Cardinals or not. And I think that's one of the things that it's tough, especially for fans, But I think for both sides, it's probably a great thing because now he can go show if he is a guy that deserves, you know, the next steps in the front office capacity. And the Cardinals can try and do this in a different way with a different guy at the helm.
Right. For me, you always hoped, like, it looked like, all right, he was going to be the next general manager. And that was real appealing. And actually I wondered if this was, hey, initially if it was, hey, we love you, A-Dub. If you have something come up, go. And it wasn't exactly like that. I think it was the perfect scenario. I'm sure it had to be hard for A-Dub. For Wilson, it had to be. To interview for the job, and to not get it. I mean, as a competitor, that he understands the business behind it, and in his statement that he released on social media, it was very clear that both Monty and Michael Bidwill wanted him to stay. They wanted him to remain in the organization, but when Wilson had the opportunity, so he learned of this possibility, and, you know, it makes me wonder, I wonder if he was, if his contract was up, because he said that in the statement that he approached, if he asked Bidwill, I guess he probably wasn't under contract. So it didn't feel like that Carolina, like, requested permission, but that Wilson asked Bidwill if he could pursue it. And Bidwill was, while they wanted him there, was happy to allow, you know, he encouraged him to look for something to advance his career. And then Wilson, who I believe now ultimately wants to be a general manager, He was now in the hierarchy number four in the Cardinals organization. And I've looked at some organizations over the last little bit, I didn't know the difference between director of player personnel, director of pro personnel. I don't know what the difference is between the two. I know this. Player personnel is above pro personnel.
Right.
Whatever that is. In the hierarchy of the front office, you've got a general manager, sometimes an assistant general manager, VP of player personnel, and VP of pro personnel. Or if you don't have VP titles, it's director of player personnel and then director of pro personnel. But in terms of hierarchy, player personnel always comes just above pro personnel. Quentin Harris is the player personnel VP title. Wilson's pro personnel. And now since they have an assistant general manager in Dave Sears, he's now number four. And as much as you like to see him in the organization to continue, if he has aspirations for more, he was going to have to leave. And so this gives him a promotion. He gets to go back home to North Carolina. Granted, he's raised his family here, so he loves it here. But now he gets to go home with an organization that right now seems to be in the up and up. Something, it looks like he can be part of a true rebuild and kind of build things the way he wants to, or be part of that. And so I'm excited for that, and as much as I'm not a big Panthers fan because Cardinals can't figure out how to beat them, I'm very intrigued with, and I'm going to be rooting for A-Dub and kind of rooting at the same time for Frank Reich because he's a coach that I admire. And so Carolina suddenly becomes a much more interesting NFC opponent from a distance.
Yeah, and they're one of, like you said, from a distance, but you also look at it and you see a team that is retooling in the same vein as the Cardinals, right?
Totally. When they brought they brought in the college coach. It sort of failed, at least in rules case, it failed miserably And then the Cardinals failed fantastically in this case because they went from bad to good to bad in a hurry. But yeah, it was kind of in the same vein of things, and now they're going a more
traditional.
Well, they're definitely doing more traditional with it almost looks like Carolina's trying to look at what Jacksonville did.
Right.
And the Cardinals are since they're going young, they're going a little bit more Philly.
Right, exactly. But you look at it, you know, there's a lot of good things. And I think for A-Dub, it comes back to, like you said, where's he going to have the opportunity to move up or move on to success? The quickest is probably the wrong word, right? But, like, be put in a position where he can be the man sooner rather than later. You know, he's a guy that's put in the time, and that's one of the, you know, coolest things about his growth is, you know, he's gone from regional scout to pro scout to, like you said, assistant to the regional manager or whatever they called it.
Director of pro personnel, yeah, MVP. And then there was a little while when he was with Bruce Arians and he just didn't have a title. They called him, what was the vice president of stuff.
Yeah, and so you look at it, you've got a guy who's put in his time, and like you said, moving, I don't know if it was laterally or how you would want to describe it, but moving to being the number four guy from being co-number one for a little bit was probably something that was hard for him to swallow, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And so, yeah, go to a place where you're the number
two.
What is he probably, you know, they don't have an assistant GM, I take it then.
I can double check.
But yeah, but I mean, like you said, he's two or three now. So like, he's not four, so he's two or three. That's all that matters. And I mean, here's the other thing, and something that you and I have discussed, and you know, when you look at it.
Oh, they do have an assistant general manager.
All right. So, I mean, but you still go from being four to three. I mean, you're still moving up in that way. When you look at this, and obviously the timing's always interesting, but what do you think this means for Q? Because doesn't it kind of feel like he's in a position where he's probably going to be here through this draft, but they've also now got Dave Sears on board where Monty's probably leaning on him just a little bit more than than Q.
It feels that way. It'd be interesting. I'm going to be super intrigued to find out if ultimately he ends up sticking around or if it's just one year and then he gets interviewed elsewhere.
Well, because like Jess and I explained, and I mean, I know, trust us, we know that a lot of you listen, but we know that a lot of you don't also retain things because I don't. So, you know, we talked about this from when they hired Monty and, you know, the question became when – if they moved on from a lot of these guys, not, you know, the front office and scouting guys, it wouldn't be until after the draft. Remember that, like those moves won't happen because teams have already put their work in. So like we wouldn't, even after this draft, this isn't going to be the Monty Austin Fort draft, right? Like, this is still going to have some lingering, unless they don't make any moves, that is. But, like, this is still going to have some lingering leftover stuff. And that was part of the reason we were not surprised to see the move for Dave Sears, right? Because that gives – because Sears is – he was the director of college scouting. And so he's been doing this the whole time where Monty was the – VP of pro personnel or whatever in Tennessee. And so he hadn't had the same time and energy to put into the college game this year. So like you bring in a guy and Dave that you trust, that you've had some rapport with, and that's how you go about things, right?
Yeah, totally. Totally. Coming next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about the future of DeAndre Hopkins, what we know, what the coaches know. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. And DeAndre Hopkins, that's one of the questions, one of the big questions of the offseason is, will he be a Cardinal in 2023? He has reportedly met with Monty Austin for it already. It was a good meeting. They are evaluating kind of what the future is, whether he fits, whether there is value to trade for him, whether he's better on the roster or as an asset. Jonathan Gannon was asked about it at the Combine in Indianapolis as he spoke to the media on Tuesday. And the money quote is, I don't know. when you say that, you think automatically, so Jonathan Gannon doesn't know if DeAndre Hopkins will be on the Cardinals, which, when you say that, casts doubt.
I think it's a realistic answer. I mean, I know that's a cop-out for everybody involved.
Yeah, well, and it makes sense right now because they're barely getting a coaching staff on. They're still trying to build a plan for this coming season where what they need on the roster. And they don't know, and plus it's not like if they're going to get pennies on the dollar, if someone's going to offer them a fourth round pick, it would be more valuable for the Cardinals to have DeAndre Hopkins on the roster than no DeAndre Hopkins on the roster. And so while they haven't decided to actively put him on the trading block, I'm sure they really don't know what kind of the plan is yet.
Right, and I think part of it is going to come to fruition a little bit this week where they're able to have conversations with other GMs and front office guys and go, okay, like what is your sell to me to trade DeAndre Hopkins? I mean, it's one thing if he's just like, I'm out, I'm done, I'm not coming, I won't play for this team anymore, and you kind of Jay Crowder him, right?
Like, oh, jeez.
But
Phoenix Suns reference, guys, if you're not paying attention, Jay Crowder was a starter for the last couple of years for the Suns. When they were ready to move on and make Cam Johnson a starter, Jay Crowder kind of said, I want to be a starter. And they just sat him on the bench. And they said they just sent him home. They sent him home.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to. And so if it's not a just straight up, I will not play for this organization anymore, then you take your time, you do your due diligence, and you work through it. And one of the things we saw, and Cardinals fans should be fairly comfortable with it, right? One of the things we saw last offseason was when draft day comes, things change. Cardinals sat there with like, okay, let's see what we have. Let's see what we can get. And what they got was no chance at getting a wide receiver in that draft. So they had to trade the 24th overall pick for Hollywood Brown. So, you know, unless they're blown away by an offer that says, hey, here's a one, right? Like this, we're not even going to delay it. You know, we're the Ravens. We've told Lamar Jackson, like, hey, re-sign. We'll go get you a true alpha wide receiver one. Okay, you know, we're in. You know, here's the pick. Let's do the deal. Let's get this done. Then you sit there and go, okay, let's see, you know, whoever's at the back of round one. And trust me, as we get into this, you're going to find out that this isn't the best time to need an alpha number one wide receiver draft class. Like, this isn't the draft class where you're like, oh,
it's not I last year's draft class,
right?
For sure,
right? And so, like, there are two or three of those guys, but remember, last year there was seven wide receivers taken before the Cardinals picked. There won't be seven wide receivers taken in the first round this year. So, like, if you're sitting there and the Giants at 26 or the Ravens at 23, you know, want a guy like Hopkins during the draft, and they go, okay, well, you know, the top three guys are off the board. I'm not wasting a first round pick on, you know, Zay Flowers, and not trying to take a shot at Zay Flowers, just saying. And and then you come back to it and that's what it is, like, it is, you know, that's where your opportunity comes in, right? That's where your opportunity as as the Cardinals come in and you go, oh, now I can go get something.
Do you think that they can get a first round pick for him? I think in the right scenario it could, but I think we're probably going to be looking at, if they make a deal, it's going to be a two plus like a pick next year.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at with the whole situation. Like, it's tough. It's definitely tough to see them getting a first for him. But like I said, that's why I think waiting actually behooves the Cardinals.
A team like the Ravens, Benjamin Albright on the PHNX Cardinals podcast suggested to keep an eye on the Chiefs.
And I've said that all along. And, you know, I not that I think the Chiefs would deal their first, but, you know, if they're unable to get something done with Juju, and then, you know, you look at it and you go, hey, you know, we're in a spot where Kelsey's older. You know, we're going to have to retool this offense eventually, but like, can we get one more great run out of it? You kind of, you know, again, a Phoenix Suns reference, you go get the older guaranteed guy, right?
Right.
Like, the only way that the Suns trade for Kevin Durant doesn't work is if he's injured. You can say the same thing about adding a DeAndre Hopkins to the Chiefs, right? The way it doesn't work is, now with Hop, there's a little other stuff, you know, if he gets suspended for a full season or something like that. But, you know, realistically, the only way it doesn't work is if he's injured. So like, would you trade 32? Well, then that goes back to a conversation you were having on Twitter today, right? If you were able to get Hopkins or 32 for Hopkins, now you're in New England Patriots move down stack day two pick territory, right?
Right. Not, then you've got 32 and 34. You can move out of 32, pick up a pick in the 40s and, you know, a third or a fourth rounder or even something for next year and still get two guys at 34 and in the 40s or whatever that are probably equal in grade.
Right. And so that's what it comes down to. I think the whole thing with Hop is going to work itself out. Like, I really do. I don't see it being prolonged into the season type of thing. I think they're going to get something done. I wouldn't be shocked if it doesn't happen until draft time, but I think they're going to get something done, and it's going to be one of those situations where when you trade a superstar, when you trade an all-pro, you're always going to tend to feel like you got the short end of things. But I think in the end, it's going to be one of those situations where it was like, hey, yeah, the short term probably wasn't the best, but long term, you were able to add, you know, two guys or three guys, depending on, like we said, where they get the pick and then how they maneuver through that.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, is we want to talk about Isaiah Simmons and the future that he has in this defense under Jonathan Gannon. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Isaiah Simmons, one of the big questions also moving forward with a new defense, where will Simmons play? Will he be a linebacker? Which linebacker position will he play? Will he get moved to defensive back? And what will they then change what they do with their defensive backs? Will he play in the slot like he did last year? Will he play safety? Will he be a rush linebacker? Will he be that? There's lots of questions for that. Jonathan Gannon, of course, said he's looking forward to figuring that out. Because, of course, he doesn't have an answer yet. One, why would he answer if he knew? Two, he hasn't been able to, like, they've just now got the coaching staff together. And while they do have schematic philosophies, I'm sure they haven't got there. They're in the process of figuring out who fits, who doesn't fit, and how they might use him. Are you surprised that Gannon doesn't have an answer yet?
No, I mean, it's just one of those, like you said, it's one of those things you aren't going to have an answer until you kind of sit down and have the conversation with Nick Rallis, with the new, you know, Patrick Toney, with the new linebackers coach, you know, like, until you have those conversation with those guys, is like, hey, how do we want to use these chess pieces? And I think one of the things Cardinals fans should be excited about, and yeah, I get it, offseason always brings in false hope, you know, and whatnot. But I think one of the things Cardinals fans should genuinely be excited about this year is that you have guys in Gannon and Rallis and Toney and these guys on the coaching staff who seem to be a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? They seem to be better at identifying talent, or not identifying talent, but like identifying how to utilize that talent. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, totally.
Then what we saw with Vance. And that's, you know, and I hate, like, I know people think that's like taking a pot shot at Vance. It's really not. But like, you and I have talked about this before with the Vance defense. Vance is really good at getting the most out of guys in his defense in his way. But he's not great at creating a defense that makes everybody on the defense successful. We will see if that translates without the high-end talent that the Eagles had this year. But we saw Gannon do that. Rallis is supposed to be a guy that's incredibly innovative in his defensive schemes. So it's going to be interesting to see how those guys all play together, so to speak.
Yeah, and if we look at the Philadelphia linebacker situation last year, they had their middle linebacker in T.J. Edwards. It wouldn't figure that Isaiah would play that position. They didn't draft him to be that. That would be the Zaven Collins of the defense. You look at Hassan Reddick, who was a rush linebacker, 16 sacks. Now, by the way, T.J. Edwards had 150-some-odd tackles. Hassan Reddick had 16 sacks, second most in the NFL. And then on top of that, on the other side was Kazir White, who had 110 tackles. And on the surface, I would think that Simmons would be used in that role and could potentially be, because I believe Isaiah Simmons is a more talented player than Kazir White and would be able to do better and more things from that position. And still, in many ways, they could still benefit and maximize his positional versatility to play from that position to kind of do what they tried to do, what Vance Joseph tried to do, and move him around. So he could, from that position, cover in the slot, play in the box, rush the quarterback, drop back in coverage and things like that. At a glance, I think the Kazir White role is probably what Simmons will play, but could you see, do you see him moving more to defensive back? Could you see him used more as a blitzer, like in the Reddick role? As a, you know, while he is not a, what his strength is not as a straight up edge rusher, he doesn't have the bend. He has the athleticism, but he doesn't quite have the brute strength against linemen. But do you think he could do Hassan Reddick like things from that position?
Yeah, you wonder that, and you wonder how, you know, like you said, I like the mold of the Kazir White thing, right? I like the mold of that. And then you look, you know, you know, and we'll get into this as we go, but you look at the draft and there's a Hassan Reddick, just a probably a little more souped up version. Now, obviously, he has to play that way. It's a, you know, different level, but you have an opportunity to go get somebody in that mold, right? In Will Anderson, and then all of a sudden you've got, you know, you have the question of can Zaven Collins fill that TJ Edwards role, as you mentioned. And I think all of that is what, you know, they're working towards and figuring out right now, right? Like, hey, is Zaven a guy that can be TJ Edwards, or do we need to go look at bringing in a TJ Edwards?
and he is a free agent. He knows the defense. He would be a perfect fit. Wouldn't come cheaply. So it would be throwing more money at a position that the Cardinals have been throwing money and draft picks at for a while. So it'd be fun. It would be quite Cardinals to do that.
Right. It would be no different than what we normally do. That's what makes it fun. But yeah, I mean, those are the questions that are going to be asked and needed answered. And that's, you know, as much as we lament and we want to cover the team that's playing in the Super Bowl more than anything, that would be, I mean,
that would be so fun.
At the end of the day,
so fun.
Jess and I do this not because it pays the bills or anything like that, but it's because we're genuine fans of this team and we've kind of given ourselves to the fact that, like, this is who we're going to cheer for and what we're, and so, like, at the end of the day, we want to see a Super Bowl just as much as any of the other fans do, because, you know, we spend hours during the off season, you know, painstaking over this stuff as well, not just podcasts, but obviously with the sites. And so, yes, being at this juncture makes our jobs way easier right now than it was maybe 2 years ago, right? where you're coming off a 7-8 win season and everything's kind of where it's supposed to be. And now all you're trying to talk about is what's coming up next season. But we've also done this now. This is Jess's, because you went through the Wizen Hunt to Arians era there.
I did.
So this is, I mean, this is his fourth time. This is my third time going through this transition. And it's like, man, just one off season, right? Where you get to write about being the defending Super Bowl champs and like, and
you
stuff.
Can talk about how like during the combine for the second year in a row, Sean McVay's off on a yacht somewhere because
right.
Why not?
Exactly. Yeah. And so that would be fun. But at the end of the day, like, this is much easier content for us in terms of things. Like, we're able to talk about what these guys are looking at doing, how it fits, how it's going to work, and being excited about it. And that's where we're at this point. And yeah, it's a little bit of hope, but I mean, that's all we have at this point, because that's all we know. Like, all we know right now is what they did in Philly or Minnesota or, you know, Indy or wherever it was, and what they're able to, you know, how that can be extrapolated and now used in Arizona. And so that's the thing, is like, you know, can, you would assume Isaiah Simmons would be able to do more than Kaiser White, right?
You would assume, think so.
Right. You would assume that if they added a TJ Edwards, then you're kind of, you know, then you have questions about Zaven Collins or where Zaven's fit is. You know, you kind of see what you would get from Will Anderson in that Hassan Reddick role, but you also see and the player comp of Jalen Carter is his high end is probably Fletcher Cox. So like, you can see what getting a Jalen Carter at three would be, because you can see what an older but still incredibly, incredibly talented Fletcher Cox did in that Eagles defense, right? And so, yeah, like, all of that is fun to peruse and think about and see, you know, kind of through the looking glass into the future. And hopefully, you know, in 2 years we're saying, all right, well, now it's Drew Terrell's turn because Drew Petzing is off to coach, you know, this bad organization, because the Cardinals got it right and they're headed in the right direction.
So if you're in agreement with me that the most likely role that Simmons will have will be that Kaiser White.
It feels like it would make the most sense, because yes. Here's the other thing with White, and I'm pretty sure if, and I'm going to double check right now.
He's undersized
sure
as a linebacker. And he actually, on Pro Football Reference, he can play some DB.
Yeah, but he was also a failed guy in L.A. So he was a fourth-round pick in L.A. They had him at defensive back. They moved him to outside linebacker. Then they moved him to that inside linebacker. And then he went to Philly and kind of thrived in that role this season. You know, he had a really good season last year in 21 and you know, kind of showed Philly what he could do. And then all of a sudden, you know, he had another 110-tackle season, you know, kind of, and with seven passes defense. So that's kind of what you look at, you know, if you can get 100-plus tackles and, you know, 8-9 passes defense from Isaiah Simmons.
Right.
That's what
and
you want
you
from a guy.
Want to see from a Simmons in that sort of role is you want to see a couple, two or three interceptions, maybe four or five sacks as well to really fill that stat sheet. But playing in that same sort of role where he can, where they use him in coverage. If there was any doubt, I wondered, did you, like if we look back to last year when he was used primarily as a slot cornerback, he, and Vance said this last year, Simmons didn't get exposed last year as a slot corner. So he's a guy that was a safety that was learning linebacker, but then they lined up in the slot, not just against tight ends, but against some speedy receivers, 6'4", you know, 240, sub 4.4 speed. He's a giant out there running, you know, step for step with some really speedy receivers. And he, you know, while he didn't play perfectly, he made mistakes, especially in that first game of the year against Kansas City. But if you look at for the course of the season, you never thought that coverage in the slot was a deficiency.
No. And he improved so much over his time. And, you know, it was one of the things that we questioned when he was coming out. Is that, you know, is it smart to ask a guy that's never really been a true inside linebacker to come in and play inside linebacker? And goes back to the square peg round hole thing of like, sometimes you draft a guy and you know, we saw it with Hassan here. Everybody was going to play him at inside linebacker. The Cardinals just tried to do it. They also tried three different times, and the third time it took to play him on edge, you know? and so with a guy like Simmons, you want to find the way to utilize him to make sure that you don't have a situation where you lose a guy that's a, you know, let's just be honest. Like, I mean, Simmons or Hassan Reddick's a flat out freak. He's a freak. He's a stud, whatever, you know, verbiage and things you want to use. He's a guy that the Arizona Cardinals could have used, right? And they misused him, and then it just became, and I think it was Pugh that said that, right? Like, he was never coming back here.
Right.
And so that all is something that it happens. Like, I know people don't want to hear that, and they, you know, well, they should have figured it out. Well, you know, they probably should have, but they didn't, and they weren't the only team that was thinking that way. So it is what it is, but at the same time, they, you know, they made a mistake, and, you know, it's cost them, and not having an elite pass rusher that's, what, 28, 29? And now having basically, you know, no established pass rushers. So you're just hoping that they don't make a similar mistake with Isaiah here, and he gets to somewhere that can use him. And that's the hope, right, with the new regime, is that they'll be able to utilize him in a proper way that gets him, you know, he doesn't have to be an all-pro. There's only 22 of those every year. But is he a guy that can make a couple Pro Bowls? Is he a guy that can be, you know, an Adrian Wilson-like player that has that blossom later in his career. You know, and that's one of the things that people forget about A-Dub, right, is that it took A-Dub until his fifth season with the Cardinals till he made a, you know, till he was, oh no, it was his sixth season till he made a Pro Bowl, right? Like that was one of the big things. Remember, and you remember obviously, but
yeah,
and I can remember is like, it was a big deal to him and something that literally hurt him every year when he was, you know, he was the number four voted defense player of the year in 2005 and didn't make the Pro Bowl.
Oh, jeez.
And then you look at it and he made the Pro Bowl the next year. And you talk about that all the time, right? It takes one extra year. So
especially for guys like on Cardinals on bad teams. So if you are a great right. player, it takes an extra year before, like, it takes a great year and then they're like, oh, he had a great year last year. We put him on a Pro Bowl watch and then he gets the Pro Bowl after that.
Right. And so that's, you know, that's where it's kind of at now for Isaiah. You know, he hasn't had a great year, but like, that's the hope, is that this regime is going to come in. And, you know, it's really funny because we talk about it with Kyler and hoping that they get the most out of Kyler, but like, there's a lot of players that we feel like need that, right? Like we're talking about Isaiah, we're talking about Zaven. You know, we haven't mentioned like, you know, Cam Thomas and Myjai Sanders, like that they need, you know, they need that, or that Josh Jones, or, you know, all these other guys as well. Because realistically, the guy that gets all the pub, the guy that's going to be the do or die for a lot of things is going to be Kyler. But there's a number of players that are in a position right now that need to show something, or show something more, right?
Absolutely. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, special Cardinals talk on the web. Our final segment, we're going to delve into a little bit of what Jonathan Gannon is planning on his meetings looking like. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Jonathan Gannon, give us a little bit of insight of kind of what he wants to do in his NFL, in his classroom meetings, position meetings, team meetings. Interesting, because when it was Cliff Kingsbury, the big thing everyone talked about was how he was going to give guys cell phone breaks. That was literally like the talk of the NFL, was his philosophy of Cliff was about, and he was all about business. So he's like, get the information, get it in there. Don't waste their time. Get them out, get them on the practice field and doing things like that. And he basically said, here's your stuff. Take care of it. Be a professional. Gannon's going to be different. He wants interactive meetings. They're going to be competitive. They're going to put guys on the spot. Guys are going to be called out to present and you know, and that, like he says, he doesn't want it memorized or regurgitated. He wants it understood. As an educator myself, I kind of get that, but the first step to understanding is to be able to regurgitate that information, but conceptually as well. And so I'm very intrigued about the notion of these teams.
How are they going to go about it?
Yes, right? And he's going to call out guys. Okay. All right, Isaiah, boom. Okay, there's a scenario. Tell us about it. And you're put on the spot in front of your teammates. And there's something really old school about that. It's hard to see outside of the locker room and the team meetings and in the football organization. It's hard to do that. But it gets me more excited about Gannon, because what I feel that he's creating is greater competition and everywhere. And I'm reminded a bit of Jim Harbaugh, only so far without the incredibly grating personality that wears you down and wears you down. Gannon, thus far, he's got the uber competitive, like he wants to elevate people and he's going to put stress on you so that you are better. But at the same time, he will be extremely positive and will show like the coach love, the type of love coaching that Bruce Arians believed in, that he got from Bear Bryant. He said, I'll coach him hard and hug him afterwards.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that you know it way better than I do, because you're, and I know you're teaching, but it's the same thing basically. You're teaching high schoolers. You know, I coach, but I coach, you know, this year I'll be coaching 12U kids. They're a little squirrelier, you know, a little more knuckleheaded and stuff like that. But I think one of the things that you've seen, because you've been a teacher for what now, over a decade, right?
This is year 22 on that career.
Right. So for you, you've seen the change in the kids. And Cliff's coaching style was about adults. And it was about treating people like grown men that deserved respect because they're professionals. And you and I as professionals, you know, we appreciate that, right? We appreciate not being micromanaged. We appreciate being able to do our thing, and we take that respect and we give it back in being responsible and making sure that we're doing
and producing our, we're productive, yeah, at what we do. We're given a level of respect. They don't waste our time, and then we go and produce.
The problem with Cliff's way of doing things is it only works if you have 50, and it's more than 53, right? It's what, 70 some odd with the practice squad and all the other guys. If everybody's buying in, everybody has to buy in. And the fact that there wasn't everybody buying in, whether it was offensively, defensively, special teams wise, coaching, you know, assistant coaches, coordinators, whatever it was. And we know it was happening. We just don't know to the extent and exactly who that were not bought in, then it doesn't work. And so, yes, you've talked about DJ Humphreys, right? He did not work with Bruce Arians, but at the time he was a young kid because he was only like 20 when he got drafted, I believe, right?
Yeah, he was super young.
He was very immature. He was used to being babied and being the best. You know, he was a four-star recruit. He went to Florida. He played for a couple seasons, didn't play particularly well, and was still thought of as, you know, one of the best offensive linemen coming out in a draft because of his size and movement ability. And then he got here, and all of a sudden it was like, we want more from you. And it's like, well, I don't know how to dig down and do that. I've never done it before. What are you talking about? So, you know, it's one of those situations where Gannon's going to come in and kind of put the kibosh on all of that, right? Like, hey guys, we're getting back to doing things old school, maybe. I don't think it's old school. I think you would agree it's not old school, but a little more authoritarian, right? Like, we expect you guys to be respectful and to put the work in, but we're also going to push you guys to do it. We're not going to just expect it to happen and assume it's happening. And I think that's what the difference is going to be, is that there's going to be more, and they've talked about it a lot, there's going to be more accountability about things.
There's going to be pressure to know stuff.
Right, and that was something that was missing from, especially at the end of the Cliff regime, is that there was just, and this is a conversation that you and I can have on another show, but I think I know where it stemmed from. And I think that's where the whole aspect of things getting kind of blown up from the entire coaching staff, a lot of the front office and things like that. I think that was important because there needed to be a reset of the mind just as much as there is of the schemes.
Absolutely. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the Rise of C-Red podcast. Of us, our Cardinals talk on the web, episode 403. If everything goes well, we will be back later this week, either Seth and I or with a solo pod, where we will talk ahead in episode 404 about each position and what the Cardinals stand in need of at each position. So that wraps this up. Make sure to sign up if you haven't yet, of course, subscribe to the show. And if you also haven't you make sure and get on over to the Original Draft Breakdown podcast for Seth. Get all the draft goodness at this time of the year. He and Justin will be breaking down numbers from the combine. They'll be testing numbers. And that's Justin's wheelhouse with trending and you know, athletic scores and things like that. Make sure you get to catch that. But we'll be back again soon. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!